When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Welcome to Knife Talk, podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers. You know who you are. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives, here with the captain of the ship, Craig Lockwood, and no Mareko. Mareko is gallivanting along in Montana with some high-level dudes doing his thing, but in the meantime, we have our one of our favorite people of all time, and your favorite people of all time, Fingal Ferguson. Fingal?
Hey, darlings.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
All the time. Craig, how are you feeling?
I'm probably going to be a little quiet on this one.
Okay.
The whole family has just gone down with everything. So we're still in the UK. Little buddy, our one-year-old, he's been in hospital for 4 days.
Oh my god!
Came out late yesterday. So he'd had just chicken pox, just run-of-the-mill chicken pox. But you know, when you're one, it's not very nice.
Big deal.
It's a big deal, but he also had an ear infection and sickness and diarrhea, and he couldn't eat because he had chickenpox in his throat and he couldn't even drink.
God.
So he had to take him to hospital, and obviously he's dehydrated, so they had to put him on a drip for a few days in hospital, which meant my wife was obviously in hospital with him, and I'm there with the twins now. So we're in my mother-in-law's house without any of our stuff, really. With the twins, they've had sickness and diarrhea as well. And guess who's caught that today too? Myself. So it's been
sorry to laugh.
It's been a lovely trip.
Yeah. I'm only laughing because I connect with that one. I've got five kids, so like it kind of goes in circles around the houses, and we've all had the ultimate never-ending head cold.
Yeah,
that time of year. But spring is around the corner.
The
leaves are on the trees, and the flowers are budding, and you just need some good sleep and a lot more vitamin C.
Oh, geez. Well, last night, buddy came home with my wife from hospital sort of late-ish afternoon yesterday. And he hasn't been sleeping after like literally 5 minutes every few hours. And he's been like for days and days. So my wife hasn't been sleeping either. So it was a case of, right, you go to bed, I've got this covered. You need to go and sleep, I've got this covered. Little did I know, 5:15 this morning, I'd still be awake, rocking a crying baby, only to have to go to the studio this morning for 9 a.m. as well. So I've been in the studio all day as well.
And it's for Blowasis?
Noasis. Wait. Yes.
So if this is the first time you're listening, Craig is on the bucket list of bucket list. He is in Wales. Normally he's in France. He's in Wales, and he is playing music with the drummer from Oasis.
In the original studio that it was all recorded in, am I right?
Exactly. Yes. So it's pretty special, and we've been doing other stuff as well. So it's been really good, but it's not a nice place to be in the studio where you need to have shit every 30 minutes in the middle of a take. You know.
Well, you know what? You could probably go into some fantastic spin where you're on the verge of like a hallucinogenic sort of situation from dehydration and lack of sleep, and probably come up with the ultimate masterpiece.
Well, who knows? Who knows? I'm sure what we did today, most of that wasn't usable. But yeah, anyway, that's been my week.
Does the drummer know you're sick?
Oh, they all know I'm sick. Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. So I've been in a booth away from everybody too, because nobody else wants to get sick. So I'm in this little tiny booth, like a soundproof booth. Oh, it's just, yeah.
Oh, God, like you're hotboxing yourself in
there. Yeah. I was going to say the same.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're fucking farting your sick farts in there.
No, no, no. But believe me, I'm not trusting a fart at the moment. I do not trust a fart.
Oh, God. That's a... Oh, my God.
There's a title. Do never trust a fart. There's a title
for
this week.
So, which... What if other... In Rockfield, what other famous artists you think got locked up in there, in that little booth? Probably some sort of illness. Probably like, you know, like Keith Richards with syphilis or something like that, you know?
I'm sure that's happened, yeah. Yeah, I mean, everybody's recorded there. So, it's steeped in history. And I'm leaving... I'm leaving my stain on the place too.
Oh no. The Lockwood DNA is somewhere in there.
Exactly,
huh?
Yeah.
Missed the bowl and, you know, carpeted bathroom floors, you never know, right?
Yeah, people always say when they walk in, if these walls could talk, like, if these walls could sniff, believe me.
Jeez. Wow.
Enough about me. Jeff, what's been going on?
You're not going to believe this, but I was sick this weekend. I am fucking sick too. So I don't know what happened. I picked something up somewhere. Maybe it was when I was down at the Center for Mental Arts or whatever, but I had some sort of like, I was down on Saturday. I worked 12 days straight and then I just like crashed and I was like not feeling well. So I'm kind of congested. And other than that, just talking to Fingal, we're in this really amazing place. The first time Fader Knives has completely caught up on all our custom orders. I have one that just to an easy, nothing to write home about one. I mean, not when I say that, I mean like, you know, one, you know, not a big deal. And we're starting to really amp up production in regards to having stuff in stock. David's been great and we've just been taking on way more than we, you know, normally we would have had, you know, a certain amount per month of custom orders. And then I would just always add, like, even back, you know, almost a year ago, I'd add five more on. And then we just caught up. And now we're keeping the same pace and then putting them on the website. So I was telling Fingal, we have, like, as of now, we probably have 50 knives in stock.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. Yeah. So all sorts of different things. And I'm just trying new stuff and I'm just letting things go where they go. And we're writing newsletters and we're putting them up, and it's just kind of neat. And
are you finding it really freeing now, being able to do what you want? I've noticed that, like, even the stuff you put out this week is to be, you know, colorful and slightly different to your normal stuff.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's weird because I've always, you know, a lot of knife makers talk about don't take deposits or don't take money before you make the thing. And so I had to really think about not feeling like, you know, depressed, like you take the money and then after a couple months there's, you know, nothing. And I really like the idea of not having to steal from Peter to pay Paul. You know, that is one thing. It's one of those things. And in order to keep going, in order to get to where we were getting, we had to take money up front. Freeing, yeah. I mean, we were able to do some things that I wouldn't normally do. Like this past week I got to the shop and I was talking to my business partner Tony. He's just like, yeah, why don't you forge some things? We'll put some forge stuff on the website. So I spent all day Monday forging some knives out, and we're going to get those out for next week. And we're just trying to think, you know, 10 to 15 knives a week, and it's been good. It's been good. It's been, you know, it's been weird, too, because I don't know. Fringle and I were talking about this. I was talking to Tomer a little bit. March is a weird month, and we've been noticing and talking to a few people that, you know, January and February are good, and March is kind of like tapering off. Something's going on, so... You know, you get a little bit worried, but, you know, you think about how you were since last year and, you know, this is business, you know?
Yeah.
Don't worry, all the chocolate's going to kick in now and after Easter. And sugar buzz, hope. We'll ride the sugar buzz, the wave.
Well, yeah. Fingal, how have you been? What's been going on with you?
Good. I've been, we're kind of doing some renovations on a sort of what was the old glass house, a conservatory part of the house, which was like a badly built a long, long time ago. And it was always too cold and wet in winter and it was too hot in summer. And so we kind of whipped the old glass off the roof and I put on a sort of a clad, a double seam kind of roof onto it. And some lovely friends are down, some electricians are down at the moment. We're putting some lights up. And so the next thing around the corner is to sort of use this as our sort of the clean workshop.
Oh, nice.
So the whole idea is that the original workshop that I've always kind of been working out of for so long, shared with pigs and chickens and the sounds of calves in the background and rumblings of tractors, that's still going to be like the main dusty kind of crazy workshop, and then all the heat treating equipment. So I'm going to clear out a lot of the things I know would benefit, and all the storage side of things I'll bring down to this new space. And then bit by bit, I'm just going to differentiate between... I want to avoid that yo-yoing effect of sort of like, you know, like, you know, if you leave something on the other side of the room, you know, you just go over and get it. Whereas I don't want to have to do two things with a job and then regret it and have to go back to the other workshop just to grind something down. And then I don't need to have two of everything in the way of tools. So I'm kind of, yeah, it'll be an interesting thing to have two spaces. Mm. And largely I'm seeing this new space as a sort of a kind of a more dust-free or better extracted, and probably more of a better storage area for all the precision and fine stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering what kind of operations will you do there to differentiate between the two?
I think in principle, heat treating is one of the main things I can do down below. Storage of belts, materials, prep. So I'll lay out all the blades, lay out all the materials, assemble what I plan to do, get everything kind of ready, make bolsters up and sort of do all the kind of mini milling and all that kind of information. Plan that kind of side of things, and then glue and assemble. And as soon as the knives are all glued, take them up to the other workshop, and then it's basically get them down to shape and have them sort of ready to bring back down and probably finish and sharpen and etch and everything back down to the other one. So what I'll be doing is sort of like prepping handle material in the original workshop, the dusty one, if you imagine, that would be very much prepping handle materials, grinding down blades, grinding down handles. So yeah, basically the one where you need earmuffs and dust masks for everything is one space, and the other one's and the fun thing is I might put a good couch in there and let kids come in and have projects for them, whereas I couldn't have done that before, you know. So I'm looking forward to it, but I think baby steps and slowly move things and don't overthink it. Just know that I now have an area for storage, and if I eventually bring everything down there, then I will. But
yeah,
it's my initial thought is to do it this way.
Gotcha.
I like your shipping area. I've seen pictures of you sitting on I think it's your kitchen with this big table with these big, beautiful glass windows, and you're doing your drawings and wrapping them up. It's like out of Home and Garden magazine.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is you tend to spread out, you know, in some ways. When you have a tiny workshop, you know, you bring your work home with you, you know. So the knives that are finished, I store at home. The knives that I kind of are wrapping and sending out, I'm doing after the kids are in bed and sort of wrapping it there. And it's great. You know, that's the glass of wine in hand, and it's the take time. And I think that's one of the, like I've kind of said this before, that the workload of wrapping a knife is actually quite large, especially when you're doing, if I do the batches like I am now and selling them monthly, you realize, you know, that it's actually a whole day, if not 2 days, to wrap up 20 or 30 knives. Or the best part of those 2 days, but that's the stuff that really makes a difference. You know, the packaging and the personalization, like you do with your watercolors and those little details. And it's something I'll never walk away from as much as I want to.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So, you do a great job. You have like the, it's almost like a canvas that you would paint on, and you wrap it up with like butcher twine and get a little drawing in there. I still have all the drawing and stuff that you did. It's really, really nice.
I think they all came, every little addition, like the layers of past the parcel that this is, with the knife being in the middle, you know, the butcher's paper. I was very glad with that. That was a sort of a little tweak, and I think everybody should do it. The origami element of I just use butcher's paper. So there's this kind of jump between knife making and butchering for me. So I actually kind of, I wrap up the knife, but it looks like a salami at the end of it, which is kind of funny in its own way. But one of the things I would say that everybody out there should be trying to do, if you get butcher's paper and you fold it over and you fold it over and you fold it over and you fold it over, so it's a long, thin, folded over piece of paper, and you wrap that, you know, put the knife edge into that and you wrap it around it. If you actually then wrap that up again, you know, it's the safest package in the world. It's not going to puncture any parcels that come through the other end. You're not having to buy anything. It's all recyclable. It's so simple, and it's just at your fingertips. It's just a clever bit of origami in the end. And you know, I think that was one of those elements. Then afterwards, like I said, the butcher's paper and the crepe paper, and you know, I am taking the piss now. There's F's on everything. But hey, you know, why not? You know, that's it's the
yeah. Thing. So is this now a completely full-time? Are you still involved in the farm and then in the food production?
More busy than ever with the farm. I've actually found myself... Right. Yeah, I mean, my parents have definitely passed on the more of the cheese side of things than ever. So I'm running the... with everybody else. So by the way, don't get me wrong, there's 20 people to make Gubbin happen. And I think I kind of wake up in the morning, do the kids stuff, and then go straight to the smokehouse and the dairy and more or less go through everything. And so I try and deal and get on top of everything in the mornings. And then if I'm lucky and no one's missing and nothing's broken, I get the afternoons in the workshop. Mm. So it's a 50-50 thing. But, you know, some days, like I said, you might not get an entire... You could probably get a couple of hours in a week making knives. And other times I can be very lucky and spend a lot of time in the workshop. But you know what? They're all intertwined now. And I think what's grateful is I've never been given a hard time for making knives. You know, people kind of see the intertwined connection between the food, the knives, the farm. And my dad especially, he loves a fully decked out workshop.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody who needs to fix a machine, he's suddenly, you know, for somebody of a certain age in respects to probably only ever owned a vice grips and tech screws, you know, he's found how to use Dremel tools and battery.
Don't mention the Dremel on this show. Don't mention Dremel.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. I have the same one as you. What are we talking about? What is the name of it? The flexi shaft.
You're talking about the Fordham.
Fordham, thank you. Yeah, I'm more of a Fordham man. Yeah. There you go.
Not me. If you ain't Dremeling with three,
if you don't have three Dremels, you ain't Dremeling. Yeah,
that's right. You ain't have three. And with that said,
do you ever use the third hand for your Dremeling?
Yeah, third hand, third input. I mean,
the Dremel wedge between your thighs.
I always about to say, when I look like I'm skiing with a propeller coming out of my ass. And with that said, Craig, what's this podcast sponsored by?
Wondered where we were going there. Even Heat. We all use Even Heat. If you're going to make any sort of heat treating with a knife, you need the best stuff. Even Heat is the one to go to. Evenheat-kiln.com. Go and take a look, see what they've got. They've got a full range, whether it's your first kiln and you're just starting out. They've got small units. They'll even make you a custom one if you need be. They've got everything. Evenheat-kiln.com. Go take a look. Big supporters of the show, too. We love those guys. Family-run business. It's a great place.
Before we get into it, we have a little bit of kind of business to take care of.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so I thought I'll just kind of do that. Number one is our friend 118 Blades. He's a great guy. He's a huge supporter of this podcast and other podcasts. He is, it's Mark, Mark at 118 Blades. He's got a GoFundMe for his wife. And he's a huge part of the maker community. And he's got his wife is not doing so hot. And they're raising some money for her treatment. So if you could do me a favor, because we all, you know, we do enough around here. You could do something. I'm talking to you, the listener. Go over to 118 Blades and go check out his GoFundMe. And I'm sure Mark would really appreciate your support. He's a great guy, a big follower of this podcast and work for a podcast. He's a very involved in the maker community, great guy. And he's looking for some help. So 118 Blades has got a GoFundMe. Go check him out.
Will there be links up as well on Instagram or anything like that?
There's a link on his Instagram. Okay. So 118 Blades, there's a link there, and you can get that squared away. The next thing is I want to clear up something. We mentioned this earlier in the number of podcasts. There is there's a competition. It's called the Blade and Edge Competition. And Dorian's doing a great job. It's his event. If you want to get more information, go follow broken_tower_culinary. And I'm just going to read you the name of this competition that Mareko and Craig and I will be the judges of. I've gotten a few messages, people wondering, is this real? Is it fake? It is 100% real. He has a private Facebook group, and you can join there. But I'm going to read to you what this event is. The Blade and Edge competition has been announced, and it's a great opportunity for you to show off your skills. This year's theme is the final frontier, so get creative. We're judging entries based on originality and execution of design. If you're at least 18 years old and live in the United States or Canada, you're eligible to participate. Sorry, guys. You two are out. Here's a quick rundown of what you need to know. You will you have until April 30th to submit your work. Winners will be revealed by the end of May or early June. The entry fee is $10, and all the profits, the entry fee, go straight to Feeding America Charity. When submitting your entry, be sure to include 3 high-quality photos of your finished knife, and I'm writing, without your face in them. Don't put your face in them. Don't put your hands in them. Do the whole knife. Nice. We can judge them. I don't want to judge your beard, for Christ's sakes. 3 work-in-progress photos featuring you with the knife and a short video, 2 minutes max, introducing your knife. You'll find the link to the submission page in our You'll find the link in their submission page if you go to broken_tower_culinary. To enter, click through the submissions page on their show notes, not Knife Talk show notes, and then click the submit button. You'll be guided through a submission process and asked to provide the images and video of your knife. Then you pay the entry fee and you're in. So here's what I'm going to tell you. Go to broken_tower_culinary. And that's where you're going to get all the information for this event. Okay? So get yourself squared away with that, and that's it. And that's all the business we have to attend to. So
cool. Admin done. Oh, okay, let's do some questions, shall we?
We have great questions. We have also great why me, why does this always happen to me? We have also great listener feedback, and we want to do a little bit of an in-depth dive on Damasteel with our friend Fingal. So,
We do. We've got some exciting news for Damasteel fans out there too. First off, question from Jake, the Canton Cutler, who is only about 2 or 3 miles from me, where I am at the moment.
Right. Getting sick by the moment.
yeah. It's contagious.
Come on,
Jake.
Jake, yeah. You want to take a couple days off of work? give old Lockwood a shake. Go exactly. Check out that. Give him a shake.
If he comes
his
up to your doors, you're looking for the crapper.
yeah. Don't shake that, Jake. Right. Hey, KTP. After much consideration, I've gone and bought myself a mill with a sole purpose for now of milling out slots for half guards on belt knives. I've bought a 4mm carbide end mill, a chuck and a chuck holder, plus a table clamp. Can Jeff hit me with some simple hot tips? I've never milled, and I've got a batch order of 10 knives that relies on me mastering this process. Jeez. Thanks again. I've listened to every single episode, and it's still a weekly highlight. Thank you, Jake. So Jake is the Canton Cutler on Instagram, and he's got this question to us via Instagram. We are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. If you've got a question, sling it over.
I think Fingal should start in, because Fingal is the master of the slot.
Oh.
How's the slot, Fingal?
Let's get a t-shirt with that on.
Do you know, hey, Fingal, how's the slot?
Do you know what? Do you know what's kind of interesting is that I've always been a fan of big boy toys, and I right. love the workshop tours and seeing everybody having their fantastic gadgets. And I'm very close to a wonderful or a couple of friends who have good workshops, and I can go out and use their ones. But I have a very high speed mini mill that I kind of use. Now, I don't know if the word mini mill is the right one, because I've seen these very petty ones, the small ones, the high speed. It's like a Dremel with a very crappy little bed on it. They are a pain in the ass. My one's sort of more mid-ground. It costs probably a little bit more than €1,000, nearly two, with all the gits that come into it. But what happens is that it really doesn't do anything metal. What I find is the high speeds, it is just purely and utterly designed for working with G10 and micarters, and you know, you can pull off a lot of things in relation to just making really good slots and precise, you know, with the 2.5 mil burr and bits. But I don't know. I can't do anything with metal, but I have become a master of the old itchy stuff, you know, carbon fibers and G10s. Right. And it makes life so much easier. Now, I've kind of got two things going on. There's a friend nearby, like I mentioned, who's got a fantastic workspace. I give him large slabs of carbon fiber, and he runs the mills in there with a CNC-powered machine that does a most incredible slot. And what I have is the ability to tweak it now. So if my blade is bigger than 2.5 mil, I can just put the neck size up and change it and tweak it. But overall, I think that's all I kind of do with them. I think literally it's just that sort of high speed stuff. And I'd love to work more with metal, and I have found that if I tried even doing something with nickel silver, they still wander and they still kind of go offline, and you really do need to invest heavily in a good mill to actually pull off very efficient and kind of good clean work if you're talking about metal. So I think, yeah, I'd nearly say save your money if you're thinking of just getting a cheap dinky one to play around with, and actually find somebody who actually does have the toys and get a relationship with them, and then, you know, and then take it from there to find the boundaries of you know, what you actually want to achieve and pull off. But I think,
is a 4 millimeter, is that for like, so that's bigger? Because I'm assuming, because I have the, what you have, but smaller. Like, I got a small milling machine, which I love. I love it.
But when you mean small, like it's, kind of
it's a tabletop. It's a table. Yeah. It's a tabletop. It's a desktop. It's a desktop milling machine.
Yeah. It looks like a drill press. Yeah. But it's got an access on the table. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And I'm assuming that's what he wants. Right. I don't know how big is 4 millimeters. Is that like quarter?
Four mil. What was mentioned as 4 mil?
He got a four mil. He got a 4 mil
carbide end mill. He's using an end mill. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose.
I would think he's doing just for. I would think he's just doing slots. Maybe he's probably doing brass or something, for a belt knife.
Yeah, I mean, four mil is a. I mean, that's big enough. I mean, if you think of the steel and stuff, that sounds like, unless you're doing kind of hunter knives and stuff like it, probably like some of the chef knives would be thinner than that. Do you know? I've just not had much luck myself, and I think that I'm very interested to hear kind of Craig's approach to sort of what you can pull off with the computer, with the much more precise, tiny incremental drops, and actually patience. You can do probably amazing things. And if you're an absolute lummox of a bull in a china shop like me, you snap bits left, right, and center, and just charging into things, or sneeze, and you're breaking your bits by just, you know, speeds and feeds, you know, all this kind of stuff is interesting. But I'm too lazy to learn about computers, and I like playing with it. It's like old fashioned. Remember those the arcade computer games where you kind of sat opposite sides of, you know, somebody with old Tetris kind of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of. Yeah. It's a funny kind of rub your stomach and pat your head kind of element of working. And I have literally used Tippex on my controls to kind of do forwards and backwards to make sure I don't go in the opposite direction, which painfully can happen every so often. There is fun in machining, and I'd love to learn more about it on that kind of side of things. But I think some of the best toys, I mean, we don't have the same repertoire to, or access to, I think, secondhand probably machine, unless you really know what you're looking for. You get very lucky over this side of the world.
For Jake, my suggestion would be is just get comfortable with one direction. You know, if you're doing slots, because I just looked up 4 millimeters is like around a little bit bigger than an eighth of an inch, which is all right. So he's talking about slotting for a table for, you know, like maybe it's a little bit more closer to like 3/16 or something like that. I'm going to get inundated, something like that. Don't worry, guys. It's under a quarter of an inch. So I would suggest not worrying about backwards and forwards and left and right just once. I'm for slots. All I do is I'll get a little square that's bigger than I need, and then I'll make a cross section between the sides. And then I'll just figure out exactly how much I need. The most important thing is you don't want to overcut your material bigger than the knife. Like, if you want to have yourself like a ledge, so when it drops in, it's nice and tight. So I started to make sure that my bits were almost on the money or a little bit smaller than the material, and then I would just hit it with a little file just to kind of get it in. Or you can undercut behind your tang. If you're dropping your tang in, you can just kind of undercut your tang, so when it fits through the slot, you know, it's a very nice connection. That's kind of key. But I would try to keep it as simple as possible. I went for simple as possible, and then also do passes. Don't try to fucking oink it all in one pass, whatever your material you're using. Like, I'm the pass king. And then my only thing is I wish I had like a tiny little vacuum cleaner that would suck away the chips, you know, not blow them everywhere, just like suck it away, so I can I see my lines and I'm just using one access, and then I'm just going pass and lower, pass a little lower. And I've started to really enjoy it just by keeping it as simple as possible. I love that milling machine. Like, I could sit there and I could mill fucking like little tiles all goddamn day long. I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I suppose the next step up from something like that is one of the old school sort of mills that would have like a power feed on them. So not quite a CNC machine. You're still setting up everything manually. But it would you'd set your speed for the movement, and obviously you set your speed for the rotation anyway. But yeah, I mean, like Fingal mentioned, you know, it's CNC in them. I mean, my CNC is probably about $2,500, and there's no way I'd ever use it for steel. No way in the world. I've used it for copper and brass. We've got to be so slow, and I'm talking.
Some of these metals are very sticky as well with the burrs and things like that, and you learn
exactly. Yeah, particularly brass, actually. Yeah, and I think slow and steady is the way. You know, super small passes, and just let it take its time. I mean, the great thing about using CNC is let it take its time. You can go and do something else. But if you've got just one of these sort of standard, almost drill press mills, where you're doing everything manually, you're going to have a very, very hard time cutting any sort of metal, really. But, you know, if you want to get into CNC and you never have, you know where you should go? Knifeprint.com. Knifeprint.com. Great. It's basically CNC in a browser. So rather than download any sort of really expensive CNC software that you need licensing for, do it all in the browser. Super simple. You can save your designs and all the rest of it. The best thing about it is they've got special tools specific for designing knives and knife parts, whatever it may be you need. They're great. Knifeprint.com. And once you're done, you just hit print. Pick the steel that you need, you want cut, the thickness and all the rest of it, and they'll do it for you. They'll get it either water jet cut or laser cut, and they'll ship it out to you. So if you've never done any sort of CNC before, knifeprint.com is a great place because they've got an educational centre there as well, where it'll sort of lots of videos to show you how to do it. Much, much simpler than you think. So anybody going the CNC route, if you've never done it before, knifeprint.com is a great start.
I'm speaking of the website now.
Go ahead.
Is the version 2, is the software up and running, the new version
it
of the
is,
knife
print? It is. There was a delay in getting version 2 up. Mm. Yeah. It's up and running. So, yeah, if you haven't used it before, or even if you have used it before, it's all new. Go and take a look. It's a father and son doing that project, and they're doing a really good job.
Last but not least, in regards to milling, you know who does an incredible job without very little is our friend Ben Camon of Camon Knives. Mm-hmm. He does the butt caps and bolsters. It's like, it's very small. I mean, he doesn't even have a mill. He has like a very expensive drill press, and he just kind of like makes it happen. But the precision that he gets with all those butt caps and bolsters is extraordinary. And he's got very little in terms of milling experience. But
he's a master of what he achieves with that.
He's a funny guy too. Mm. I'll tell you what's funny about him. Ben is he's a very, when you see his work, it's hard not to take him very seriously. You know, it's like you take him seriously, but he wants to fuck around. So he wants to come on to Full Blast. He wants to fuck around. And it's like, it's hilarious because he's just a great guy. He's funny, but he wants to come on with Ben Snort. So I'm going to have the tale of two Bens at some point. They want to just
amazing.
Fuck.
I'll tune guys in just, for that one for sure. Yeah.
Ben wants to fuck around. Ben is a serious guy. He doesn't want to fuck around. So it's funny. Cool. So whatever you want to do, Craig.
You take the next question, and maybe not the next one, because it was quite linked to that first one. Maybe take Butcher's.
Okie doke. So Butch Sullivan, our good friend Butch Sullivan out of Philadelphia. Hey, guys, I have a dilemma. I've been asked by a friend who manages a restaurant group to make a knife for one of their chefs, as they are a James Beard Award finalist. Super stoked, of course. But I've been given a budget that it's on the lower side. Do I take the hit and give them what I want? Or do I take the hit and give them what I want, which is some pattern welded steel, something awesome, or should I make them a beautiful mono steel knife? What do you do? So you got these motherfuckers, they're always the same. I'm going to just imagine what they're going to call. They're going to contact Butch and say, "Oh, Butch, we know you're a big Philly guy, and we're going to be representing this James Beard Award winner, and it's going to be a big deal for you, and we want to honor you with the ability to make this knife for this fucking guy," and blah 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 blah, blah. You got $300 to work with. That's what it's going to be. You know, we want something really, really special. This has got to mean something really special. $150 is all you got. Never fucking fails.
I don't know. There's so many friends I've made knives for, but if I don't know them or there's none of that kind of connection in any kind of way, that's a more painful pill to swallow, and I probably haven't gone down that road. You know, but I think if this chef is a friend and there's other connections, and you know that it might be mutually beneficial to have your knife in the hand. But I think the other thing is that will it be in his hand? You know, you can often do these and you never see them again. I mean, there's definitely a few celebrities that have, you know, that probably even somebody bought a knife for them through me, or things like that have happened, and you never see them again. I think there are all these risks in the whole process. You know, you might think that it guarantees something, and it won't at all. It's just gone. So it's what you're willing to do. And if you just look up or like or are a friend with the chef in any way, then let that be the more important part of this.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I think, you know, what do you want out of this? What's the best possible solution? If this guy is going to be on TV telling the world about your knife, maybe there's something to that. But the likelihood is, again, you're never going to see that knife again. And make something beautiful with a monosteel knife. Show off your talents, what you can do within that budget. I think, yeah, I when I first started, I thought a route would be to contact, you know, celebrity chefs and get them using my knives. And it doesn't really pan out that way. It really doesn't. Do what you can for that budget, and I'm sure you can make something great.
You always can make something, and it'll be a great. Sometimes the picture is worth more than the actual knife. Like if you get a great picture and it's in your portfolio, like sometimes to me, like I don't get caught up with these knives because if I get a good picture and the picture helps sell their knives, then that's fine with me. No, 100%. The TV thing is weird. It's hit or miss. Like the times and I get like the Jacques Pepin knives I made for Jacques Pepin. I always usually get a couple hits from that, and then another one from America's Test Kitchen. I get a lot from that. But I have had stuff on other chefs, and it's like you think that it's going to mean something, and it normally doesn't. So it would be hard to say, you know, you need a direct. You know, you can get guaranteed direct sales from it. But if you want to make them, if it's just about the steel and you want to do Damascus instead of, you know, monosteel, what's the big deal? But I would think about it and be like, yeah, what the fuck? Just do it. But then I'd be like, you know what? Fuck this guy. You know what I mean? He's just a cheesesteak guy. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Fingal. Fingal had a Jamie Oliver. Jamie Oliver called him Fungal. Remember that?
But so does the rest of the world.
But do you remember that whole bit? He did this beautiful event. Oh, my dear friend made this
oyster knife. You'd made him, yeah.
Dear friend Fungal Ferguson.
That's my fault for having a stupid name. No,
in the UK it's on him.
I mean, even the nickname for this podcast is done for something stupid. So, I think getting names wrong, but it's, yeah. Do you know what? One of the things I feel like has always helped me is I've actually done so much in the food world that I've been at barbecue events and cooking things, and actually to rock up and be the person who has the whetstones and the spare knives, and actually other people see your knives there, that stepping stone is, you know, is probably one of the best ways. If you can find yourselves to volunteer or be at least part of, you know, food events in any form or way where there are other professional knife guys, the feedback from those events is incredible. And still to this day, I'm constantly learning and changing my mind due to feedback from working side by side by people, because, you know, you'll often find people in a short period of time telling you what you want to hear. But after 3 hours of working next to somebody and after a couple of beers, and, you know, you'll get a little bit more information. And, you know, that exposure at the time of actually having your knives in hands, you know, they are, that's definitely worth so much to you. If you can get into any form of way of doing some kind of big food event, get in there.
Just because this guy's a James Beard guy doesn't mean he knows what the fuck he's talking about. He won't put it in the dishwasher anyway. Those guys are just as bad as everybody. You know, there's just because they know how to cook doesn't mean they know how to do everything. So make him a monosteel knife, you know, or do whatever you want. I don't think you can lose because Butch makes beautiful knives, Heart of Philly. He makes beautiful knives.
But the eye of the beholder. I mean, a cleaner, more beautiful monosteel knife with certain subtleties about it can actually suit a certain personality more than a blinged up over the top knife. So it's actually probably casing out the personality of the person you're making it for. Maybe that person wants to have something more subtle and sexier than all blinged out. So probably just, do you remember that film Chocolat, the movie where when somebody walks into the shop, the lady behind the counter could tell straight away about what that person was craving or wanting.
Yeah.
And I think that skill that develops over time of actually finding out that, you know, that person looks a little bit more like somebody who's going to use my Japanese knife to split a T-bone, you know.
Right.
You have to read the person.
Well, then. You know, that reminds me, a number of years ago, the Culinary Institute of America asked me to make a knife for this chef who just had this new book out. And he's a kind of big time guy in the United States. And I was like, I had an idea, and I was just like, you know what, I'm going to make it a little extra special. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Let this guy get something special. And I made it special. We had to hunt him down to pay. We had to hunt the Culinary Institute of America to pay. But then it was not appreciated the way I expected it. And that's the other thing. Mm. Your expectations of what you're going to get back are usually unreasonable to the fact of usually people are on the ruder side. Not ruder side, but just not as polite as you would expect.
No, a gift through a corporation like that can slightly be taken for granted. I can sort of almost see that more so than from a close friend.
Right. Mm.
And it's funny, if you look at your own favorite knives at home, your most beautiful knife that you use all the time, you know, the knives that have been given to you and have an emotional connection, no matter what, you will subconsciously reach for that so much more than you will probably reach for anything else. If you've bought the knife as something for yourself, even that alone can be enough of a trigger. But at the same time, those emotional connections are important.
Yeah,
Fingal Ferguson, the emotional connections. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Look, I want to take this next question really quickly, just to sort of pique my interest a bit. JH Knife Shop said, I just got in my first laser, which is a 20-watt diode laser. I plan to use it for adding a maker's mark to my knives, cutting out my leather sheaths, and maybe etching patterns into the leather. I have a setup and ran a 6-inch exhaust for it. Do you guys have any advice for a knife maker with a laser? Any cool projects you suggest? I plan on making some leather strops and adding my logo to the wood backing. But it's a diode laser, so it's not going to do anything with steel whatsoever.
You mean it's not going to mark steel?
Not even mark steel. You may anodized aluminium, possibly. That's as far as you're going to go. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about using for leather anyway. A 20-watt diode probably wouldn't cut leather. It would mark it very nicely. You may be able to use it with your CNC software to mark out your leather and then cut it in the usual way. But I can't see it cutting.
Are you saying that this poor guy told us what he wants to do, and you're telling him he cannot mark his knives with a 20-watt laser?
Possibly. I mean, 20-watt diode laser is $70, $80, $90. You know, it's not a high-end laser, but it will definitely mark leather and paper and all that kind of stuff, without a doubt.
With the right tuning, can you control the depth at which you mark that as well?
You can. So you focus the laser. Basically what you're doing, you're intensifying the laser on one particular part then. And just like with a CNC mill or anything, you've got feed speeds, you've got the power of the laser, and you use various feed speeds and so on. But I think, you're going to struggle to cut. But as you said, you're looking to put your maker's mark on leather sheets and that, so it will work. But with regards to a tip, is whatever software you're using, and guaranteed it's going to be shit software. That all of these lasers come with the worst sort of Chinese software that's just all over the place. It doesn't do what you want it to do, crashes all the time. But make sure that the source image that you're using isn't like a rasterized image, like a JPEG or anything like that. Make sure it's something like an SVG, which you can scale up, and it's not going to lose any of the resolution. I see so many people using just like JPEG images and then moaning about that the image isn't crisp. Use something like an SVG or an Illustrator file, something which you can blow up big, and it's not going to sort of pixelate, if you like. But then you should be good. But good luck, because generally laser cutting software is a bitch.
Yeah, there's a
good friend
called
Garvin. Sorry. Is there one that you like?
No, not really. I use the one that came with my laser, and it's just the worst. And anybody who's got a laser will tell you exactly the same thing. There are software like Lightburn and things like that, but they're generally for quite specific lasers. And most people are buying cheaper Chinese lasers, and you won't be able to use the better software for it. So you're pretty much stuck with the software that it comes with.
There's a close friend of mine called Garvin De Brewer. He's the guy who is behind and the most amazing leatherwork. What he can do with his hands is incredible. His workshop is stunning. He lives for it. And he actually was one of the ones telling me about a lot of what he finds capable with his laser, which every so often would break for him or do different things. And he's a guy who fixes it for him. But he has these amazing projects. I think one of them is the Big Horse race course kind of in his, and he did these giant things where the walls are almost entirely tiled with leatherwork, and he has probably used the laser to almost emboss and create a map almost on the side. They said the smell in the building alone is stunning, that smell of leather. But the outline and everything, the first thing that comes to mind with all these, this kind of laser engraving on leather, is probably the size of your bed. I mean, if you think about it, it's like, how big an area can you actually work within, and what are your limitations in that respect? But I think that the more you delve into it, if you have that ability, they are capable of so much nowadays. I think the sense of scale is something kind of interesting as well. If you're talking about the tiny little burner that's really just good for doing a beer mat, you're limiting yourself.
Yeah, and a lot of these sort of these small diode lasers, you can get them to sort of almost clip on. If you've got a bigger CNC machine, a mill or whatever, they can clip onto those, so you can like exchange the head for, instead of a million heads, you can put a small laser head on. Okay. And you can use software to tile what you want. So you'll tell the software that your bed may be, I don't know, 36 inches by 24, and if your image is bigger, it'll tile it automatically for you and put these little registration marks. So as long as you put the next bit on exactly the same place, it will continue that image. With a 20 watt diode, this is probably a bit more advanced than that. You've also already mentioned about using exhaust. Make sure you're exhausting those fumes out. It can be pretty disgusting.
What are the more dangerous sort of fumes that you want to avoid? I mean, if you're working with micarta's and any of these kind of things,
micarta's and plastics, and you'll see it's just a thick black smoke that will come out, and it's not good. I've tried to use my laser for sheaths, and again, it's just not nice at all. Just make sure everything is exhausted, and keep that lens clean as well, because that black smoke will cover up the lens, and all of a sudden you'll be moaning about how bad things look.
This laser thing sounds like sounds like it sucks. This whole laser game sounds like terrible.
It's not clean. I mean, you can see these fantastic videos where everything looks clean and beautiful, even when you're cutting steel with a fiber laser. And marking steel, it's the smell that comes off that it needs to be really well vented. But good luck. It's going to work. It's going to work for what you want it to do, which is putting maker's marks on leather. So yeah, good luck. But yeah, make sure you're not using JPEGs. Make sure you're using SVGs or Illustrator files, that kind of thing.
Dang.
I tell you what, we haven't talked enough about abrasives. Jeff, what abrasives do you use?
Oh, Combat. I use the 36 grit shredder belts or dynamite. And if you go to combatabrasives.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK15, you're going to have 15% off your order. And when you're buying all your belts and your abrasives and you're buying your mops and you're buying your wheels and you're getting all that compound, get yourself some of that purple compound for you Kydex guys. They have special wheels specifically for Kydex edging, and they have special purple compound for it. Put in promo code Knife Talk 15, and you're going to get 15% off your order. That pulls off a lot. So go get yourself some of that Combat Abrasives. Stop playing. So why don't we do a little bit of conversating about our friend Finkles here. Last week we were talking about the Damasteel build-along, why don't we talk about the build along, how successful it's been, and then we'll talk a lot how we use Damasteel and how, what's the best ways to go about starting this project up.
Yeah, sure. First off, we've sold out of the pieces needed for the build along. So we knew it was going to be limited. So they're limited to 50 pieces. So 50 people were going to join us on a build along, and myself is doing it, and Jeff's doing it, Mareko's doing it. We're all going to do this mass build along, all using exactly the same dimension piece. But they've sold out. So what they've said is they're working very hard to get more in stock of this specific piece. The pattern is Vinland, which is this beautiful, beautiful pattern. So follow them on social media. They are Damasteel Lab. And I don't care what anybody tells me. I don't care what anybody tells me. They're Damasteel Lab on Instagram.
We got a feedback. Someone said, I can't stand it anymore. It's not Damasteel Lab. It's Damasteel AB. AB stands for, I think it's the LLC of Sweden.
The website also is damasteel.se.
Right, damasteel.se.
That's for the website, yes, yeah. Right. But follow them on social where they are Damasteel Lab or Damasteel AB if you want to be really petty about it. Really petty. And they're going to put some stuff up when they've got more stock because they've been hassled by it, by our listeners saying, we want more. So they're working hard to get more. But the more people that do this build along, the better, because I think it's going to be great. The only constriction that we have is that it needs to be a culinary knife, and that leaves the door wide open to a bunch of things. So seeing what people are going to make with this relatively, well, the piece is 200 by 25 mil and it's 3.2 mil thick. So it's going to be cool to see what people are making with that, with these same restrictions that we all have. But yes.
Question.
Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So once they do the build along, does that automatically put them into the knife, the Damasteel Invitational, or do they have to apply for that as well?
It does. Well, they'll need to send through photos of their finished piece.
Okay.
So we have Fingal and Jeff with us, who are both Damasteel Chef Invitational winners,
champions.
It's my champions. Okay, I need to win this one. Yeah. Okay, champions. I'll win this one.
Where can you actually find a picture of the blade that you get for the build along?
Well, it's up to you. Your own interpretation. So this
so
is just a blank.
You get the rectangular.
You're just
billet.
Getting a blank. A billet, and it's up to you what you. It just needs to be a culinary knife. So it could be a paro knife, a petty knife, even a bottle opener, anything that you'd use in a kitchen. So it's going to be fun to see what people are using. Damasteel Lab on Instagram. Follow them. They'll let you know when more pieces become available. They're selling like hotcakes. They're selling out very, very fast. So what we're going to do over the coming weeks is when myself, Jeff and Reco get our pieces, we're gonna do the heat treat, and we're gonna talk you through that process, and we're gonna talk you through, you know, our design decisions and all the rest of it, all leading up to the Chef Invitational, where they will pick a winner and they will win an award, and there's prizes as well to be won. It's gonna be good.
So
I really want to win a pair of pants.
The Damasteel pants.
Hey, Carly.
Yeah, I'm working for the pants. Yeah.
Carly. The pants. We need the pants. Carly, we need the pants. Carly listens. Yo, the Damasteel people love this podcast. They don't mind our nonsense. Yeah. They don't mind our nonsense. Yeah, 36-22.
We're only here for the pants. Yeah.
They're 36-22, Carly. 36-22. So, 32, for Christ's sakes. I'm not 2 feet tall. So I guess, while we're here, I mean, Fingal talked me through. I mean, Fingal is my coach. Like, if I'm Rocky, he's Mickey, because he taught me how to use it. So why don't we talk about how easy it is to use the Damasteel, how to heat treat it, and we can talk about cryo versus not cryo, how to etch it. We could do a quick little just tell people how easy it is to work with.
Well, the first thing I'd recommend for anybody is to go to the website, because there is literally on that page, you know, there is a whole section divided to the downloads. And on that, you actually have the specs for the thing. So if you go to the website, you click on downloads, and inside that, you have your steels that are all in there. Now, we have all our names for the patterns, and then you have the sort of their own code for the Martin Sittick sort of steel. So you have they also make a steel for perhaps jewelry and that kind of thing, which is a steel that won't harden, a Damascus that won't harden. But it's all on these very easy to follow kind of spec sheets on what to do. So I think for most of the cases, you know, if you're going to be a grindstock removal kind of person who's just going to buy the billet, grind it down, and then, or heat treat it and then sort of do your grinding afterwards, it's actually not that bad. One of the things is, if you want to go down the liquid nitrogen road, or if not, just kind of skip that step. But this could get complicated. I don't think we need to delve into the whole temperatures that you reach and everything else, because the specs are there. But you do have these options at your fingerprints, you know, at your fingers. You know, you can kind of make it as simple or as easy as you want to. And again, like, it's all down to perhaps the slight subtle benefits of the liquid nitrogen for the grain structure and everything else. But I think I've been using RWL34, which is the main steel that they use for almost all of their Damascus. And it's very easy to work with. I've always had great success with stainless steel blades, no matter what. I just think that you know, carbon steel can be a little bit trickier at times, where it just won't harden for you at all. But what detail do you want me to go into in relation to the?
Well, I think for our listeners who might be just, you know, maybe apprehensive, I mean, the idea is you're going to need a kiln. Mm-hmm. Heat treating in a forge, it's really impossible, because you're holding it.
I don't think you can reach, like, if we're going to do centigrade, was it? It's 1,080.
I think it was like 1925-ish. Mm-hmm. 1925 Fahrenheit was what I've been heat treating it at. So you got to hold it for quite a while, and you do need stainless foil to kind of... Yeah, maybe. I mean, I use stainless foil for stainless, and that prevents the oxygen from... You know, taking out too much or whatever.
Do you know what I've been using of late? Have you heard of Cordusal and these sort of spray-on? I've actually just got some recently, which is like almost like a spray-on version in a can as well. But the Cordusal is like a paint-on sort of version or the equivalent of wrapping in foil. And I've had great, great luck with it. I mean, I think it's anything... I think on the other side of 1,100 degrees centigrade is probably getting a little... And if it's too long, a holding time at that temperature, it's probably not as good. But these Cordusal paints and a good coat of that is actually the equivalent of using the stainless steel foil, and I think still to this day stainless steel foil will always be that little bit better. But it can you imagine that, rather than when you take the blade out of the kiln, you're going straight up against your aluminium to suck the heat out, you don't have that buffer of the foil, and it doesn't puff up, and you don't have any other kind of things like that. I've kind of slightly converted to this new kind of paint on heat treating heat-resistant paint. Very, very good.
One of the things I noticed was I was concerned that when the piece of Damasteel arrived that I used, I thought that it was going to be pre-hardened, and it wasn't. It was annealed. It was a little bit tougher. Kind of stainless steel is always a little bit tougher than carbon steel to kind of use with you're using a saw and stuff like that. You don't have to normalize the billet once you get ready to heat treat, right?
I think the only time you have to do that is if you kind of get a round billet or anything and you start forging it. You know, if you're going to literally go in and out of a kiln or the forge and you're going to be hammering it and changing it, and then, you know, those kind of things, then you need to go back to normalizing. But in relation to just plain grindstock, which most people will be doing, yeah, it's sort of very much a case of do what you want to do, outline, drill your holes, and then heat treat it. And then what I do myself is I'll grind, because I'm always keeping around 2.5 mil, 3 mil thick stock. So I'll happily grind the sides of the blade after heat treatment. And it's a hard steel, but I think the initial grinding, it's quite hard. You'll find that it doesn't kind of melt away like certain steels, but it is a damn sight easier to get a really lovely, buttery, smooth kind of mirror polish on. The mirror polishing I find very easy with Damasteel, but it can be around 62, if not more, Rockwell. So you'll just find that the early grinding, you might use... some steels just definitely melt away under a good belt like Combat. But yeah, when it comes down to mirror polishing, yes, it definitely that's the easy part. I've worked with some devilishly hard steels, and just part of the fun of like working with 4V or anything else like that, you do not have a hope in hell of ever achieving a mirror polish with that by hand. Whereas with that's probably the best thing about Damasteel for me, is that ease of getting a good finish on it. It just mirror polishes up beautifully, and that's largely down to the RWL34.
So we're going to keep it simple. We're not going to pre-grind before heat treating. Pop your holes before you do that, and let's not fool around. Heat treat it between plates, a little air. Mm-hmm. Have some, get ready for, do your grinding after your heat treating and tempering. The heat treating temperatures are on the website. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed at how good the YouTube videos are on the etching. Let's just talk a little bit about the etching. Mm-hmm. It's not ferric chloride to etch. You're using warm.
You might see an outline or things like that from the ferric, but you're not going to get, what it tends to do is kind of dirties up the steel. I mean, one of the lovely things about Damasteel is that very high glossy silvery kind of finish. So there are multiple acids that you can use for this, and I think everybody has, you know, work with what you have. There's no harm in a quick little test etch. And I've found, and I might get this the wrong way around, but I feel that you actually will get the blacks blacker with a sulfuric acid than you will with perhaps the hydrochloric or the muriatic. But both will work, and there's only going to be this little subtlest of details between them. Now, I slightly warm up the acid to, but I mean, that might be needed much more in the sort of the wintry months. But, you know, if you're, the more you warm it, the more effective the acid is. And I don't think you want to go all guns blazing. You know, you're talking about body temperature, sort of temperature acid, if not a little bit more. You'll actually see a more reactive kind of almost bubbles in the acid as you put the blade in there. But be careful of any smudges of oil or grease on the blade, because if you put it in there and think everything's fine and walk away and come back, you'll have this streak of whatever grease that is on your fingers or anything else, and that won't etch. So you'll have to almost sand everything back all the way again and put it into the acid again. So make sure you just give it a good clean, and it doesn't take much Windex or anything else, and just give it a good wipe and a clean before you put it into your acid, and do this in the fresh air.
Especially get rid of any Sharpie marks, because that's banana tailpipe tar.
I've never thought of that, actually. Yeah, so you can actually do that.
It is a resist. I had some... When you were helping me, I was bothering the hell out of you. I must have been bugging the shit out of you.
It was good to hear your voice.
Well, you're very kind. So I didn't want to get any... I don't like acids in the shop in general, but I didn't want... And then I found out that you could use muriatic. And then the muriatic... What I did was I had a little like a hot plate, and then I put a jar in it of water, and then I put my I have a drinking boot, and I put that the muriatic in the drinking boot, and I put it in the Bain Marie.
What's a drinking boot?
I know. That's my next question. Yeah.
No, like, you know, the fucking boot, the Das Boot from the beer boot. Okay. Yeah.
The glass boot. A glass welly, right.
The beer boot. Whatever. The drinking boot. I don't know what you call it. Cool. So I used like a Bain Marie, and I was able to heat the water up, which heated up the muriatic, and I was amazed at how well the muriatic worked. because I just didn't want to go get hydrochloric acid. I don't want to get any of that.
Hydrochloric and muriatic are, I think, identical in many ways. I could like.
Well,
I
had muriatic in the shop because I used to use it.
I think they're the same thing. Right. I think culturally speaking, But
You're talking to a moron, so I don't know. And not only do I not know, part of me doesn't even care. So I just had it, and I was thrilled, and it worked great.
Now, by the way, there's also acid concentration levels out there. So what I did for years and years and years was I used to kind of go off to the hardware store and buy concrete cleaner, which has about 10% hydrochloric or muriatic in it. So that literally is the stuff that kind of will bubble when you kind of spill any on concrete and kind of cleans the floors. Now, that's enough to sort of agitate and irritate the skin and do everything. Yeah. But it's also enough if warmed up in a like I said, like your Das Boot drinking glass welly. I kind of have a beer cooler and I'll put a bucket of hot water into that and I have like a cereal container which has my acid in it. And there's a website you can go to. Everybody probably has them in their own country where you can kind of buy these acids online and you have the choice between 10%, 20%, 30% concentrate acids. And I've never understood why, but there is this thing about you add one to the other, not the other way around. There's a chemical reaction, and I'm not sure which way around, but I'm sure it'll be clearly labeled on the bottle or the container of the acid. But the stronger the acid, obviously, the more reaction you're going to get. Now, I think that for cleanliness of these things, you don't ever want to force or go too fast with these things. You may get blacker blacks by going down the slower, more careful kind of road and a better penetration and cleaner lines. But overall, work with what you have and just keep checking the blades. Just keep taking them out of the acid and having a look and watching them and work with what you have. Just start off with one knife. Don't put all if you're making 10 or so blades, for example, don't put them all in on your first time round. Do one blade at a time until you're confident with your process.
And how do you neutralize those blades when you pull them out?
Easiest thing in the world, bread soda. You know, bread soda, bicarbonate of soda is you know, on every shop around for baking bread. And a couple of tablespoons of that chucked into water is instantly neutralizes it. And it can foam and bubble and, you know, it's the cheapest ingredient you ever got that does the simplest thing. But yeah, I have them next to each other. My acid, I have another cereal container full of the bread soda. And that's like, it gets ugly and mucky, but it's still, I just throw another tablespoon in every so often. But yeah, it's very handy. Now, what I do find is that to just keep the blacks black, like I often suffer with high carbon steels, you know, making sure that the slightest smudge or anything, you can't even wipe it with paper towel afterwards. You just kind of, you can damage or you know, you can mark your perfect etch as it comes out of the thing. But with the Damasteel, what I tend to do is I take it out, I actually instantly, you know, put it into the bread soda, and then I'll squirt it with the Windex and these kind of things, and then I will dry it with a compressed air kind of gun and dry the blade out and just kind of leave that sit for a while and then kind of go buffing later on. You don't want to leave these overnight because if you haven't cleaned off enough of the acid, you know, you might get a little browniness and stuff there, but I've never found it bad enough to actually damage the blade. But I think there are little tricks you can do, but I always find that no matter what, when you finish the knife, you'll have taken it to the buffer multiple times, and it's very easy at the tail end of the whole process when your handles are on and everything's finished to just, you know, put a bit of paper towel and insulation tape around the handle and just put the blade back in for another little kiss with the acid to bring the just that little kiss to emphasize the black notes.
Cool. Okay, so if you're not involved in the build along, you need to be. As I say, Damasteel Lab on Instagram. Go take a look and they'll let us know when there is more steel available. What we got, Jeff? What do you think we should do?
Well, we have a few things. We have why me, why me, why does this always happen to me? We have listener feedback and whatever you want, more questions, whatever you want to do.
Okay. You line up some listener feedback and I'll tell everybody about Indesa Rhino-Wet. It's the sandpaper of the superstars. It's what everybody uses. Why wouldn't you? Who wants to be there hand sanding with old, dull, crappy paper? Nobody. We all use Indesa Rhino-Wet for a reason. It's the best stuff. And you can get that from Texas Farrier Supply. TexasFarrierSupply.com, where they sell Rhino-Wet. They sell all the tools you could possibly need, whether you're a farrier, a knife maker, metal worker, whatever you are. go take a look, texasfireysupply.com. And if you use Knife Talk 10, you'll get 10% off the complete order. Everything in your cart, 10%. Knife Talk 10. Go take a look, texasfireysupply.com.
Well, if you want to send us listener feedback, anything you want to do, you can go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and shoot us a message. The DMs are the best place. That's the only place I will actually appreciate a message, to be honest with you. Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. This one comes from our friend Aiden over at Cutthroat Knives. And he goes, man, Knife Talk got me through the last few dentist appointments. The dulcet tones of you, Mareko, and Craig as two individuals jammed four hands into my mouth, scraped and power washed. Scraped and power washed my insides and poked the softest part of my body with hard stainless tools and blame me for the bleeding. So
is he going to the dentist and asking the dentist to put this on speakers, or is he wearing earbuds? What's going on?
I don't know, man. Jeez. The dentist is not my favorite place, I can tell you that.
You like the doctor, don't you? You like being pegged by the doctor. We know. It's your favorite thing.
I you know, now my relationship with my doctor has changed where I like to berate him. That's my new this is what when you get older.
Get him all worked up, do you?
And you start to form relationships with these healthcare providers. As long as I'm in the right and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Is it all about makeup sex, is it?
I fucking let him have it. I tell you a funny story, speaking of getting pegged. I'll tell you a funny story. This is actually true. My doctor known me for a long time, and lets me call him Jim. I don't call him doctor, whatever. I call him Jim. Hey, Jim, I'm coming up. So he's going through my stuff, and he goes, oh, why did you get a colonoscopy? You're too young. He's like, you're not supposed to get it until you're 50. I'm like, this was a couple years ago. I was like, I had a bad problem with my – I got one because they told me to – you know, and then he said, why did you get your prostate checked? And I said, well, this guy told me to go – what are you asking me for? I already did it. And then he looked in the notes and he said, what did you tell this woman? What did you tell the prostate doctor? And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, this is the strangest chart I've ever seen. And it was basically like she had basically accused me of going in to just get to, I wanted a finger up my ass. She thought that I would go on it because I was too young, and the referral was very strange, and apparently that happens. So he's laughing. He's sitting in the office with me. He's laughing his ass off because I must have said something that made her think that I just wanted to get a finger up my ass. So I don't know how we got onto that, but no. There you go. So the answer is Jim loves me coming in because I usually yell at him and then I explain why I got a finger stuck on my ass.
Yeah.
It's not stuck on my ass. All right, keep going. Let's keep going. Let's get me out of this thing. So Blades by Johnny's got a good one, and this is actually a good topic of conversation. Blades by Johnny says, I just want to say how awesome you guys are for sharing tips and tricks. Been messaging makers lately, and it's crazy how guarded people get. I understand people got to pay their dues, but what happened to helping other makers? Anyway, made me appreciate the show more. Thanks. Now, this is an interesting conversation to have because I just got back from the Center for Mental Arts, and I talked with Pat Quinn, who is a just extraordinary blacksmith. And when I was there, he has these enormous power hammers. He's just an extraordinary blacksmith. And I figured years ago, Jesse Savage and I were saying, is at some point they're going to figure out how to make real size, life-sized anvils. Because for years they'd made small ones. And we didn't say anything. He's very private. So we go in to see the giant hammers in the octagon, and there, sitting there, are two fully forged 250-pound anvils that they forged. And it was amazing. It was amazing seeing someone that I know who is an extraordinary blacksmith create these beautiful hammers. Beautiful anvils, and they got work to do. And I said, well, you haven't taken pictures of them yet. Why? And he goes, well, I'll be honest with you. I said to him, will you teach classes? I figured at some point down the line you're going to teach anvil making classes. I mean, who wouldn't want to go make an anvil? And he goes, I'm very conflicted. And he says, because what happens is sometimes I'll teach a class or people will see what I'm doing. And they'll ask me how I did it, and then they'll start doing it and then making money off all the time and energy that I spent researching this thing. And it became a very interesting conversation because I am torn to a certain degree in regards to you know, spend a lot of time, and you guys spend a lot of time figuring out what you're doing, how you're doing it. Mm. If you teach somebody how to make your stuff and then they start to make your stuff, is that good?
I think there's a difference between the absolute basics of telling somebody how to, you know, who wants to make their first knife with a horse rasp, to actually the little intricate kind of things that you do that make your knives unique to yourself. Now, I think it's brilliant to share. Some people are like live to educate and to pass that knowledge, and I'm so grateful for that. And I think that we are as a community are incredibly open. But I think knowing the boundaries of what makes you unique, and, you know, it kind of goes back to that whole thing of, well, as like people who, when they give you a recipe, they just leave out that one ingredient. You know, that one thing that makes their cupcake the best cupcake. But at the same time, I think when somebody's stuck and to actually get through the absolute basics, but yeah, I think just knowing what you're going to, I mean, and tell somebody straight from the beginning, like these things are part of my own little way of doing it. But if you ever want help to do your own version, or if you want to shoot anything past me, then I think this is a community that definitely educates and passes on knowledge.
Yeah, I think go ahead, sorry.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I think it's about people's intention as well. Yeah. And the way they contact you. There's a lot of people who think the world owes them everything.
And, a video tutorial.
Exactly, right. They don't want a simple answer. They want you to spend the afternoon, as you say, making a full tutorial specifically for them. And that's not uncommon. You know, I'm sure we all get messages like that. But I think if somebody's saying, look, I've tried this and I'm struggling with it, I think most people are more than happy to help. But when people maybe haven't tried, or they're asking for just so much of your time, it can sting a little.
I've done a tutorial where, and I'll be vague about it, and the person ended up doing the exact thing I do the tutorial on, exactly. I mean, from the material to the sizing to everything. And then went out of their way to start a business doing it, which is fine. God bless you. But then when there was any type of feedback of like, you know, are you just making this guy's thing? There was a very like, well, there's plenty of business to go around. And it was almost like this defiant, there's plenty of fish in the sea. And, you know, as opposed to, you know, spending all this time and energy to create something, and then you just kind of figure it out because you watch what he does, and then you just kind of just do it on your own. There is something very sad about that. Now, in regards to Pat Quinn, you know, it's going to be a fucking, you're going to have to, it's going to be a very special person who can make forged 300 pound anvils. Now,
what steel is used? And surely you need to have those giant
4140. Well, here's the thing. I talked about it with Jesse, and we're going to talk about it on Full Blast this coming week. Mm-hmm. There are giant steam hammers that are now in use for basically, those giant hammers now are basically for the Department of Defense. And they're basically for like these ridiculous things. They're in stock. The people are using them still, using them for giant hooks or giant chains and all this stuff. And if you were, there would probably be a way for you to figure out how a person could, you know, contract one of these companies and say, here's how we're going to do it. I figured out how to do it, and here's how we're going to do it, and we're going to make forged anvils. Is it something that's probably not going to happen? It most likely it isn't going to happen. But I understand the feeling of spending years and years trying to figure something out, and then you kind of put it out there, and then all of a sudden somebody just takes all of the years of your research, and then they put it out in their own name. I would have a bitter feeling about it too. That's one of the reasons why for the friction folder class, I only teach as a class and I don't sell them. I'll teach as a class because in my mind, it's much more interesting as a class. If you want to make them, go make them. I don't care because I'm not selling them. That's not my business. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm very much along the lines of, I knew a sculptor who used to teach sculpture class, and he would teach how to make his sculpture. And he would just say to the students, just please don't make my sculpture to sell. But it was just like, bro, don't fucking tell them how to make your sculpture. It's like, that's really the issue, because you can't trust these motherfuckers. But I mean, it's teaching someone how to make scallops for a serrated knife is one thing, or teaching someone how to etch is another thing. But, you know, I mean, imagine, here's another example. Imagine you're a cook and you want to go learn how to make a special hamburger. And you go to this place, you love their hamburgers, and you go in, you talk to the chef, you figure it out, exactly how he makes his hamburgers. Then you open your business and you do fucking his hamburgers. That guy's not going to be very happy about it.
Mm. Yeah.
I was watching that. I was listening to a podcast about the bloomin' onion. You know.
Bloomin' onion. Yeah.
That came out of New Orleans, and now it's the Australian chain. Is it the Outback?
Outback Steakhouse. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the backbone of their business is the bloomin' onion. But that originated in a New Orleans kind of restaurant. It was the first place to do it. And what's interesting is that there's nothing, there's no patenting, there's no sort of thing you can do with food. And it must be incredibly frustrating. But
there are cooks who say, he took my vinaigrette. Like, that's a big thing. You know, like, with food especially, the food thing is interesting too, because, you know, you want to give the people what they want. You know, and somebody's doing something wild, and it's not really that wild. You know, it's just like, if you can make it happen. I mean, there's all these trends that are going on, and you can just kind of piggyback on these trends, and it's what people want. You can feel bad. You can feel bad that somebody just taking your idea. I would have a hard time with that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, I like to help people. I mean, I strictly go here. I do get messages of saying, people, can you do a video on how you did that? And that's annoying. But, like, I'll do here and stuff like that. But, I mean, at the same time, like, God bless guys like Bereka who want to give it all away. But I can understand why people wouldn't, you know?
Well, there's a fine line between, I found this in our food side of things. I mean, the cheese that we make is incredibly hard to make. It's very hands-on, and seasonally so much changes the knowledge base to make it. So there is this point that when you share your information, it's fantastic. Because a lot of people want to tick a box. They very much want to, you know, it's like sourdough bread. As soon as they made a couple of loaves, they stopped making it then afterwards. They successfully pulled it off and they move on to the next thing. And I think that there is this point where it is just fascinating to learn from people at the higher levels and how things are actually pulled off. And it's wonderful to learn the inner workings. So for Mareko's patterns, it is to actually understand what went into that to make a weaving pattern. How do you even do that? How do you conceptualize without actually maybe even asking? So there is this point where you're looking and putting these people on that are on a pedestal and deserve to be, you know, there is this thing where you do actually have to ask how they did that to understand the workload that went into it. So there's two sides to this as well.
Well, but it's the same time, you know, one thing is, and obviously Mareko's not here, but he would probably agree with me if I said this. He's said to me in private that he knows that people are basically just knocking his stuff off, and it probably hurts a little bit, you know, because, you know, it's like all this, it's weird. It's weird. And I'm kind of go both sides of the fence on this thing. I am very, I didn't take pictures of Pat's hammers, and he actually just posted them to Handforge and VT. If you want to see what they look like.
I'd love to see what they look like.
Yeah. He made bridge anvils, which is a really this neat thing that the Johnstown Forge, a bridge anvil is an anvil, and then it has two legs that go directly to the floor that are bolted down so you don't have a stump. So it's like these two long legs, and they're beautiful. They're beautiful, and he made them without the legs, and they're going to figure out. The legs are pretty easy, but it's just this amazing thing. And, you know, he's got a lot going on. But after talking to him for a while about it and kind of like, you know, he finally posted pictures about it. And they're huge, and they're amazing, and you don't really see people forging, you know, 300-pound anything, so... But that, with that said, I think it was an interesting conversation. I thought, thank you very much to Blades by Johnny. I will feel free to send me a message, and I will tell you to fuck off. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. J-Mod Knives says, I have some listener feedback. Last week, you were talking about sharpening with whetstones, and I believe I have found the training wheels for people wanting to get into whetstone sharpening. Work Sharp, that's the name of the company, makes a base for your whetstones that have the angle guides to each end of the stone. So now you can start off slowly making sure you're keeping the angle as you get more comfortable. You can do more swipes in between, checking to make sure you're keeping your hand steady. I'm probably only 10 knives into working with this product, and I can almost point to where I can probably take the training wheels off. This is the opposite of buyer's remorse, 100% satisfaction. Always love the show.
Let's okay. All right. I tell you what, Jeff, tell us about your grinder.
Oh, holy mackerel. The Broadbeck Ironworks 2x72 grinder is an awesome grinder. I love using it. And what I do is I go to BroadbeckIronworks.com and I can look at all the things they have. Not only do they have a 2x72 grinder, but they have a lot of attachments. Attachments that work great with the 2x72 grinder and attachments that you can retrofit onto your other 2x72 grinder if you have to. So if you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK100, you can get the $100 off their grinder packages. And if you put in a Knife Talk 200, you get, my mistake, you get, if you, I'm sorry about that. I have it right here. What am I, crazy? If you go to BroadbeckIronworks.com and then you put in the promo code KNIFETALK200, you get $200 off the grinder packages. And you put on KNIFETALK100, you're going to get $100 off their sharpening system, service belt grinder, and leather sewing machine. So Broadbeck Ironworks, you've done it again.
I got the Morecco Platin with the ceramic backing. And I've totally fallen in love with it. I think I've never worked with the ceramic platen before, and they are actually wonderful. There is, I'm actually very much enjoying the whole process of the addition.
Love it, love it.
Cool. Okay.
So, Craig, what do you want to do? We could do more feedback. Go back to questions.
Let's do questions. So we've got a long list of questions here. Jeff, you go down the line, pick a question which you think would be right for Fingal to answer, and one for yourself. And I've got one here from Speedster Stoves. Greetings. A question for Craig. I'm visiting Baynac in June for a holiday. Penciled in a trip to Lascaux. Are there any other places in the area you'd recommend for a day out? I'm not bothered about driving for a while. P.S. Don't worry. Not going to drop by. You better fucking not. That's all I'm saying. Speedster Stoves. I'm joking. Places around that could be interesting for a knife maker. There's Thiers, which obviously isn't too far, or Thiers, which isn't too far, which if you haven't been before is definitely worth a visit. The whole village is based around knife making. It's an incredible place. I wouldn't say you're going to see some great knives there, but there's plenty of history there, and most of the factories are pretty open to you going to have a look around as well to see their processes and stuff, so it's quite cool. Another place is Nontron. They have a small knife festival a couple of times a year, actually. Again, similar to Thiers, but a lot smaller. The whole place is based around knife making. So if you're in Baynac, Thiers and Nontron are probably the places to go.
And Layol as well, further north, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of these sort of rural French villages, they've got this sort of deep history of knife making anyway. But I think Thiers and Nontron specifically, they're catered for tourists to come and have a look at all these things. I said most of the factories, they'll open their doors so you can go and have a look. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, go take a look. I'm not in that week, by the way. I'm not sure when you're coming, but I won't be there. I'm pretty sure. June? Nah, I'm not there in June. Jeffrey, what have you got?
This one comes from Bremner Built Blades. And he says, hey guys, I had a question for you all. I've been recently completing my first hidden tang knife. My question is about putting a pin through the tang. Is it necessary or is the epoxy enough? I mostly make hunting knives, not a whole lot of kitchen knives, but in the future I may be making kitchen knives once I get like my kiln. And you mostly hidden tang knives. Fingal, do you feel the need for a pin or
no? I've never used a pin. I think that the interesting thing is the what materials you're kind of working with and how long your tang is. I suppose for me, I've never seen it. I mean, on the couple of thousand knives that I've made, I've never seen any issues with a tang coming out. And I suppose maybe it's the thing about, you know, in extreme abuse of like being put into a wash machine or whatever else, you know, will you have abuse in the handles? The worst one is perhaps working with burl woods and things like that. If you have only a part tang, that even dropping them onto a knife like that onto a concrete floor, if it's a burl wood, is I'll often find that a handle could perhaps snap in the burl wood if the burl wood has a flaw in it or anything like that. It almost always seems to be close enough to where the tang ends, like the vibration travels through the tang and that sort of is the weak point. So, you know, it's if you have a construction where you have a butt cap and the tang goes the whole way through, which is pretty excessive, you know, but can have its benefits. But to me, of all the hidden tang knives I've made, I think just very good slow curing epoxy and good, you know, good materials that you trust, and a decent enough length of tang that goes into the handle material, and perhaps not grinding down the handle too close to that tang material, you're going to be fine. I think that it's also, you have to pre-think all these things. If you are going to have a hole through your tang, it's how to marry up the hole with the tang material, because you're going to have to soften that tang to drill through it perfectly. And yeah, you don't want to do that as an afterthought.
I one thing that I've been doing lately, I've been doing all my fit up before I heat treat, and like a dry fit everything. Mm. And I actually did I don't usually put a Corby bolt in a hidden tang knife, but I actually am doing one where I want the Corby bolt to kind of hold all the parts together. Mm-hmm. And I did it all beforehand, and I got good results from it. I don't use any hardware for culinary knives. Now, I would think for a hunting knife or a knife maybe that you're going to use for camping or something like that, you probably want something in there. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, it all depends on the construction of your tang, I would imagine. For culinary, I don't think it matters. I mean, it depends.
You can also notch up the tang as well. You can put some teeth into the tang as well to actually grip the glues. And I mean, I think that most of these modern epoxies are actually stronger than wood in many kind of cases, as long as there's no grease or anything left in there. So I think I've had to... You know, when you screw up a knife, you know you've ground it all wrong, or you meet very annoyingly something unattractive in your burl wood as you're grinding into it, and like, this just won't cut the part. I'm just not happy with this. I found it's actually really hard to smash the handle off. You know, I think these glues, it's almost not happening. And I make my knives in kind of like, they look like they've been made by an 8-year-old, you know, in the early stages of kind of gluing them all together. It's really because I shape everything down afterwards. There's no work done in advance bar the making all the layers of the hidden tang knife completely parallel. You know, everything comes out afterwards with the grinding.
Yeah. I'm sorry for all the helicopter noise and the fire engines if you hear it from my end, but I'm beginning to notice is that not too far from our house, there's like a forest fire.
No way.
Oh, geez.
So apparently we're, I mean,
can
we're
you
not,
smell it?
There's no, no. I mean, it would be, it's like towards the park where we're at.
What's the weather like at the moment? It has been quite dry.
It's hot as shit. It's like,
really?
It's like in the 80s right now. It's,
no
yeah,
way.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I'm actually dying in my car right now. But,
oh, no way. We're freezing our asses off over here. We can't wait for a spring to start.
Oh, it's 84. It's hot. It's a beautiful summer day here. I know. Oh. Beautiful summer day. So, welcome to New York. I love New York.
It feels like only yesterday you were in the snow and the ice.
Yeah,
it was like yesterday there was the snow. So, yeah, I mean, for back to it, for a culinary knife, I mean, you're not really doing a whole lot. I think that people overdo it, honestly, with their culinary knives, just because it's just, you're not beating the shit out of things so hard that the handle's going to break. I've never actually heard of a handle breaking, unless maybe you don't have enough tang, or maybe it's just a little bit like sketcheroony, but I've never seen a handle break.
Yeah. What are you doing if it is? Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Let's call it a day. Should we do a little sneaky after show?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Fingal, for joining us on the show. We should speak to you all again next Monday. Bye for now. Okay.
Oh,
somebody's cracking a can.
Look at you.
Wow.
Look at you.
That's it. Pants off.
That's the way.
You had pants on already? You didn't,
I
mean,
I wasn't
you have
dressed
your pants
the
on
entire
anyway?
Time, buddy.
So what's been going on? What are you reading, listening to, watching, Fingal? What's been going on?
I've been listening to I'm almost back-to-back podcasts at the moment. I've kind of, there's a crowd called Gimlet, and they do all the Heavyweight and all these kind of ones, and there's Every Little Thing. And I love-hate relationship with it, because I like the senseless podcast full of facts. And it kind of, you know, and I've been very much enjoying that in the background. So I've been listening to those while working away. And yeah, mostly I've been working a lot with carbon fiber, so I'm itchy as fuck all constantly. Oh. And I definitely want to improve my extraction on that kind of side of things. Apart from that, yeah, it's been a lot of work. I've been fine. Do you know when you want to stay up and watch a movie? It's a great intention to kind of just relax. When everybody's in bed, I have the whole house to myself, and I haven't made it 5 minutes before I fall asleep in front of the screen. Yeah. So yeah. I haven't shaken that head cold feeling where I'm actually feel like I'm full guns blazing. But yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Can I tell you how crazy it is that you said that? Because I had one of the students who took the Friction Folder class. Is a journalist on one of the Gimlet podcasts.
Mm.
Can
cool.
you believe that?
Cool.
And then I have another friend who used to run Gimlet.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So it's just like, what a strange world. I never thought, in 3 weeks, I heard the same goddamn obscure company and people being involved with it. It's very weird. Life is so strange.
Yeah. And what is it? Like a network, is it? What is it?
Network. Wow. It's a network. And a friend of mine who was at the Times ran it for a while. Hmm. And then, look, one of my students was a fucking journalist on Gimlet. So,
Maybe not such
a... I think they have a formula that works that's kind of interesting. Things like that. Apart from that, I'm also kind of excited. There's lots of things hoping to kind of kick off this summer. And people are kind of, the adventures of things. I have a crowd coming to film from Huckberry, I think, are going to come down in... they're just coming down for a day to do a bit of filming in Gabin. And so there's, a few other projects like that happening. I think kind of everybody's starting to come out of the woodwork as the leaves are coming onto the trees and kind of thinking of the positivity of everything. So I'm looking forward to the few projects and getting out and about.
Wow. I've been so happy with baseball. Baseball is back, and we listened to an incredible baseball game yesterday at the shop. They've been doing more day games in the beginning of the season, which I love, and it's just, my wife loves it. It's like a distraction for all of us, and for listening to audio, there's no easier game to follow than baseball, and it kind of makes you think about where everything is and where everybody is. So I've just been listening to baseball. I've not missed one Yankee game since the season started. So it's been so much fun.
Nice. Very nice. Well, I haven't been listening or watching anything. I've had a crying baby on my shoulder. So, so I'm looking for recommendations, stuff to watch. It's been so... because I've been away from the house now for nearly 4 weeks.
Is there any work happening there while you're away?
Not knife related, no.
No, but I mean, construction wise.
Oh, yes, quite a bit at the house. So we're excited to get back and see that. My wife specifically, she's had this whole new office built and a whole new building, so she's really happy about that. So we're looking forward to get back and seeing that. But yeah, it's been so weird just being away from your sort of creature comforts and all these things. And everybody's very welcome in here. We're staying with family and we're moving between different family members to give them a break because it's different. We come with a lot of chaos.
Always fun traveling with a pack. But have you bonded with your new home? I mean, is there an element of that where now you kind of you're no longer strangers in it? There's bits that are familiar and you know.
Yeah. I mean, yes, but it's not yours, is it? And it's always a little bit, like even now, I'm on my mother-in-law's bed doing this podcast. It's not a normal behavior for a man of my age, but
I'm talking about France though. I mean, like with your new bar.
Did you offer her
sorry, Jeff, what was that?
Didn't you offer her a sneaky finger?
I know what you're gonna say.
Did you offer her some weird on that bed?
Oh man, yeah, sneaky finger. That was a long time ago.
I forget everything except for that stuff.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that shit.
Bonded with the new home in France, without a doubt. Yeah. We've, for a house that was, hundreds of years old, it was falling down when we sort of resurrected it and made it our own. So we've all got our own sort of spaces. And then myself, my wife's got her new office and all that. So yeah, we can't wait to get back because, as you just said, that the sun is starting, and France just comes alive.
Yeah.
It's especially sort of July and August time because everybody's got these big street markets and everybody's outside eating together, and there's all these things happening. So as much as it's been sort of dark clouds over us for the last few weeks, with people being ill and all the rest of it. There's definitely a light coming up soon, which we're all really looking forward to.
Have you been out to the woodland? Have you been out to your little woodland patch and that kind of side of things?
We have, but I haven't been to cut wood. So normally, if you cut wood, you ought to be doing it sort of, January time before the trees start building up sap again. You want to cut them as dry as possible, which is the worst time in the year to do it because it's obviously cold.
Because hornbeam was one of the woods you have there, isn't it?
Hornbeam.
I've seen a lot of beautiful stabilized hornbeam actually around, and I can imagine I've seen black hornbeam. And it looks I actually worked with a piece once, and it was a stunning wood. It's kind of like imagine bog oak, but without the sort of with a much smoother grain structure.
Yeah, it is super super dense. Mm. It is nice, but we haven't been in to cut trees down this year, simply because we've been traveling loads. So we're leaving it this year. But
when are you heading back?
We're heading back Thursday.
Okay.
So I'm driving with a full car, and my wife is flying with my sister, who's coming to visit us with the kids. So, but we did have a nightmare on the way. I'm not sure if I mentioned it on the show. The nightmare we had on the way over. So it was the same thing. My wife was flying with the kids, and I was driving. Daisy, one of our twins, had an ear infection. And my wife's like,
painful,
not
horrible.
Sure if we could, I'm not sure we should fly because, ears on a plane is never good. So she jumped in the car with me and was like, fine, we got this big, big drive. It's an 18-hour drive. She's quite happy. She's loaded up with, an iPad to watch films and lots of snacks and so on. We get to the Eurotunnel on the French side, and I pull up my pass, and the guy was like, oh, right, you've booked the wrong way. You've booked from the UK to France. And this is now sort of 11 p.m. And I'm like, oh, geez, I'm sorry. Could I buy another ticket? He's like, well, no, you can't. We're fully booked and we've got one of the trains down. So there's nothing like for the next 12 hours at least. And I'm like, oh, geez, no. So I'm in this little, I'm in the car, expecting to cross. Can't, in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's hotels there, but it's quite a sketchy area. And I've got a little one in the car with me. So she's like, what the hell am I going to do? So we couldn't actually back out of where we... So you have this booth where you need to go through, registers the car and all the rest of it. We'd come through the first booth, fine, because you just flash the ticket and there you go. But now it's all one-way traffic to the second booth. We're told we can't get through and we can't get out. So we need to wait for the police to close the road so we can reverse down the road with the police and the blue lights. And my little daughter's like, what the hell is going on here? We make a mad dash to the ferry to buy a ticket for the next ferry. They were fully booked. And I'm like, oh, geez. Oh,
this is all Easter holidays kind of around the same time.
Exactly.
It sounds like a nightmare. Yeah,
it was. It was only because they took pity on me because my daughter was with me. He was just like, look, we can fit one on somehow. So we had to write like a manual
on the ferry
out for the ferry. Yes, yeah. So we managed to get the ferry then. So it was a hell of a palaver getting over here. So I'm hoping for a smoother ride on the way
you
back.
You are never going to make that mistake again, are you?
Never again. It was, very costly.
Sadly that the train ticket's obsolete. I mean, that's burned.
Oh, yeah, that's gone. Obviously, that's gone. So you then had to buy, a last-minute ferry. And obviously the ferry's a much longer trip as well.
While your wife is drinking a gin and tonic in the air.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Having the easy life. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, hopefully it's going to be easier. But I'm all doom and gloom this episode. Everything's just like, no, fucking kids.
You're shit through the eye of a needle. So, I mean, we feel for you, buddy.
True. True.
You're yin and yang. You have bucket list and then misery. Yeah. It all evens out.
Exactly.
I mean, it is amazing how you have these like high highs and low lows. Like,
life is a roller coaster, Jeff. I'm telling you.
That's what you told me before, yeah.
Life is a fucking roller coaster.
Look at you.
And on that, thank you all for listening. We shall speak to you all again next week. Bye for now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards. Save.